Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Ainsworth Game Technology 2019 half-year results investors conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star 1 on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, February 27, 2019. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Danny Gladstone. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Edison. Good morning to everyone, and thank you for joining me on the Ainsworth First Half 2019 Results Conference Call. With me this morning, I have Mark Lutzky, our CFO. With the results, we have released an investor slide pack to ASIC, which we will refer to in this presentation. I do not propose to take you through a detailed page turn of this pack. I appreciate it's a busy day for you, so I'll just focus on the key points and Mark will go through the financial details. At the end of the presentation, we would be pleased to answer any questions as usual. Let me begin by highlighting 4 points. Please turn to page 5. First, we have made progress in delivering our strategy to increase our international footprint and grow in the key North American market. This is the foundation for our long-term success. International sales now account for 83% of the group's total, climbing from 76% last year. We said in November at the AGN that the first half's results would reflect a solid performance in the Americas, and that proved accurate. North America delivered an excellent performance. Revenue was up 40%, with profit increased by 47%. Higher unit sales and cost controls drove margin expansion to 40%, an increase of 200 basis points compared to 38% in the previous corresponding period. Unit sales were up strongly in North America at 1,342, up 38%, and our average selling prices improved plus 3% in a very competitive market. It is encouraging to see that when we design and implement long-term growth strategies, as we have here, our performance improves. We enjoyed significant growth in the first half, mainly to the sustained performance of the quick spin product family on the impressive A640 cabinet. The mix of sales was also profitable with the disciplined cost controls and margins expanded to over 40%. I'm pleased with our performance in Latin America too. We continue to consolidate our strong market position and deliver consistent results in this region. Revenue was 2% lower, although the profit increased by 1% to $13.3 million. We maintain sound profitability across the region, with Mexico, our largest market, delivering pleasing market share gains and robust results. Second, while our results are in line with expectations, I want to say to you up front that I am disappointed by our performance. I do not shy away from that. We guided at the AGM to approximately $8 million profit before tax on a pre-currency basis for the half. The result came in at $8.9 million. It is well below the potential earning powers. Group EBITDA was $29.7 million with an increase of 21% on the first half of FY18. EBITDA margins increased to 25.2% in the half, up 480 basis points from the previous corresponding period. We sold 3,687 units in half one of 19 in total, a decrease of 11%. Latin America was the highest unit volume at 1,391, followed by North America. Our performance in the domestic market was very disappointing though. Unit volumes fell to 554 and sales were down 47%. Profit was down $2 million, including a $1.3 million one-time write-off of older-style cabinets. what is the solution here, given we expect the challenging and competitive market conditions to continue? The answer lies in R&D and new product development. We will continue to pursue development initiatives and actively recruit experienced game developers and utilize third-party developers to harness the best of our internal capabilities with external expertise. Given the challenges experienced in the domestic market, we have strengthened our focus on product development to improve our competitive position. It is expected that a new product suite in Australia will be released in the second half of 2019, which should progressively enhance our customers' offerings. I am encouraged by early customer response, and I expect these innovations to re-energise our disappointing domestic performance. Third, improving the quality of our earnings is another key priority at AGT. The participation fleet, which generates high quality recurring revenues, continues to build with a 6% rise in units to 6,207 compared to June 30, 2018. Revenue from participation and lease machines under operations was $20.9 million. These recurring revenues now account for 18% of the group's total revenue. Finally, AGT has a strong capital position. Our balance sheet gives us the capacity to fund long-term growth and development strategies. We can design our future and stay the course. Cash from operating activities increased to $30.8 million, up $6.9 million on the prior year. With improving working capital position, we now have over $51 million of closing cash on the balance sheet. This strength allows us to retire debt, invest in technology, and have the confidence to transition to new product suites as we are undergoing in Australia. While we progress through this product transition, the board has prudently determined to suspend the interim dividend. The board maintains its stated policy on distributions on a decision of a final dividend, which is expected to be made at the time of releasing the FY19 results in August. So let's move back to our outlook and how we see the second half of 2019. While we face intense competition across our markets, we remain confident AGT can perform relative to its size. We will continue to implement our strategies to grow international revenues and higher quality earnings. We will judiciously invest our cash flow in product improvements and in sales and marketing to build a share in the Class 3 and 2 gaming markets. We expect to improved profit performance in the second half compared to the first half of 19, with continuing international momentum and the release of new products translating to improved financial results. I will now hand you over to Mark to take you through the financial results in more detail.
Thanks, Danny. I will start on page 7. The audited profit after tax for the 6 months ended 31 December 2018 was $12.1 million. On a pre-currency basis, PBT was $8.9 million. As Danny said, this was in line with the profit guidance we gave just before the AGM. Sales revenue for the year was $118 million, a decrease of 2% overall. International revenues were up 18% to $98.3 million, while domestic revenues were disappointing at $19.7 million. Turning to profitability, gross profit was up by 3% to $71.4 million, with gross margins at 60.5%. Group EBITDA was $29.7 million, up 21% on the PCP. Revenue in the Americas grew by almost 20% to $89.5 million. As mentioned, North America increased by an excellent 40% to $53.8 million, with Latin America at $35.7 million, a slight decline of 2%. In North America, profitability was up by 47% to $21.6 million as we enjoyed some operating leverage. Unit sales, there were 1,342 compared to 971 last year. The higher unit sales and a 3% increase in average selling prices helped margins to climb just above 40%. The number of machines on participation fell by 23% to 2,303. Let me explain what is happening here. The decline in gaming operations installed base is a result of customers preferring to purchase top-performing titles from the fleet and reduce non-performing titles for optimal floor mix. This is very logical and quite predictable. If a game is outperforming, we are happy to sell the machine. We then work to increase the size of the fleet overall with new titles. Yield per day increased, though, to $26. Despite the market being very competitive, this yield has been climbing steadily. You will remember it was $22 in 2017. The rise is mainly due to the premium we earn on our Pac-Man licensed product. In Latin America, profitability was stable at $13.3 million, a modest rise of 1%. These are solid results in a challenging environment. Mexico is our largest market in the region, and encouragingly, we continue to gain market share there. Units under gaming operation increased strongly, up 37% to 3,904. I would note that we did not really see significant sales of lower priced participation machines like those that we saw in the second half of last year. That demand for lower priced product was not a feature of these results. In our rest of world segment, revenues increased by 6% to 8.8 million. Kit sales to Novomatic generated $2.3 million of this revenue, and online contributed $2.7 million, a similar level to last year. Revenue increased in Asia but declined in New Zealand. Unit volumes were 16% higher at 409. Turning to Australia, domestic sales were poor at $19.7 million. We had minimal sales to corporates and casinos, and our performance in Queensland was particularly disappointing. As Danny said, we are in a significant product transition, and we expect this to generate improved results in the second half. Turning to page 8, I would like to highlight foreign exchange in these results. In the statutory results, we had a $5.8 million currency gain. After tax, this was a $4.9 million benefit. Prior corresponding period had a currency loss of $3.9 million after tax. While this is a material swing, we focus on profit before tax, excluding currency impacts, to assess our business performance. On page 9, we reconcile EBITDA to profit before tax. Net interest was $1.6 million and depreciation and amortization increased by $2.8 million to $16.6 million in the half. This is mainly due to the increased size of the participation fleet where we own the assets on balance sheet. On page 10, I will talk on operating costs. Total operating costs increased by 15%, although the true underlying rate was much lower at 6%. There are quite a few moving parts here. Sales, service and marketing expenses increased by $2.7 million, and adverse foreign currency translation contributed $1.7 million to this. The balance of the increase was mostly product and brand marketing costs. R&D expenses increased by $2.6 million. Again, currency had an adverse effect of $0.4 million here. We also had an increase in license fees, and importantly for investors, a decrease in capitalised development costs. The increase in amortisation reflects previously capitalised projects. Finally on this page, headline administration expenses increased by $3 million, although $2.4 million of this was due to the reversal of a previously recognised long-term incentive payment expense. Foreign currency added a further $0.4 million here too. Overall, One-off impacts increased our cost base by $4.9 million. Excluding these, operating costs were $59.3 million, a more modest increase of 6%. Page 11 shows our headcount by region and role. Headcount in Australia and the rest of the world segment down to 322, reflecting the competitive market and our performance. Headcount in the Americas increased by 17 full-time employees to 261, although this is effectively flat on the 260 in second half FY18. Our priority is to be more productive and efficient with the resources we have. Page 12 shows the net profit waterfall. As I mentioned, the Forex swing was $10.2 million between this half and the PCP. Cost of goods sold also fell by $4.5 million due to the reduction in unit sales. I will turn to page 14 where we show our balance sheet. As you can see, our balance sheet continues to strengthen. This gives us the capacity and the flexibility to fund our long-term growth strategies and technology investments. The first line here is the standout. We increased our cash balance to $51.7 million from $35.7 million 6 months prior. We increased our cash having funded technology, increased sales and marketing resources, and the final dividend. It was a good result. Better working capital management clearly helped our cash flow. Receivables reduced materially. Compared to the $193 million of receivables at June 30, at the end of December we had $153 million. As we said in August, we did expect to collect this cash. For example, the cash payment for the 900 machines to Churchill Downs delivered in the last half was paid in September. The increase in non-current assets, $238.6 million in this balance sheet, is a result of increased machines placed under gaming operations. In addition, you will see we repaid US$8 million off our loan facility in this half, resulting in net debt at the end of December of $12.9 million. We have a $90 million Australian multi-option debt facility to fund any inorganic additions. We have recently extended this to September 21 to give us more flexibility. Page 15 shows our leverage ratios, which continue to improve. The board continues to maintain a conservative approach to balance sheet leverage, with debt to EBITDA now well below 1x at 0.88x. Cash flow to debt at the bottom of this page has more than doubled to 29.7%. We are in a strong financial position. As I mentioned, cash flow was a strong feature of the results. On page 16, you can see cash flow from operations increased to $30.8 million, a sharp rise from the $6.9 million in the PCP. CapEx was maintained at $3 million after completion of land purchase and sale in the PCP. We retired $11.3 million of debt and distributed $3.6 million of cash in the final dividend. I will now hand you back to Danny for the outlook and closing remarks.
Thanks, Mark. Well done. Thank you. Let me turn to page 36, where I'll summarise and make some concluding remarks. I would simply repeat that at Ainsworth we have a clear strategy and we are executing to that plan. The competitive and challenging market conditions do not deter us. We are looking to deliberately control our future as best we can. By growing international, investing in game technologies, increasing recurring revenues from participation, levering our partnerships, we are strengthening Ainsworth as well as seeking to drive profitable growth. It is the execution of these strategies that will deliver results. Despite our size, we do have some strategic strength. We outperform our size and we will continue to do so. Our position in the Americas is impressive. Others have tried to build what we have today and have failed. Our business in North America goes from strength to strength. Joe Bellatone, our new President of the Americas, has clearly settled in well and is doing a good job with his management team. Our strong partnership with Novomatic is an asset too. We will continue to explore development and sales opportunities with them. It is a good relationship and a powerful partner. AGT will continue to invest in new product offerings to reclaim market share in Class 3 and Class 2 markets, while also pursuing new markets. As I said on many occasions, the solution to our market challenges lies in R&D and new product development. I am expecting to see investments translate to improved financial results in the domestic market in the second half of this year. AGT as a group has momentum going into the second half of 2019, and we expect growth in profitability versus half one. With the release of new games, we expect higher unit volumes across most regions. Thank you all for joining us this morning. We'd be pleased to take any questions, and I'll hand you back to the operator now. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question is from David Farris from Macquarie. Please ask.
Oh, hi, Danny and Mark. Look, I was hoping to get more colour on the initiatives within R&D, so I've got two questions here. Firstly, are you guys able to talk through the product innovation? So what's changed is in, you know, how should we think about the proposed product suite compared to the current product suite? And secondly, how should we think about the mix between internally produced product and third-party studios in the medium term?
Okay. We start the second half of this year with, we do have some certainty. We've had 3 lots of new brands released and approved in all jurisdictions. That, for a start, is something was clear for us for this half, but we didn't have the first half. So we've released the Kanga, the Mad Millions, and the Crazy Jackpots. Lined up after that, there's another 2 or 3 brands to be released, so there is a line of a library coming, which our customers support. Some of the innovations that we've had over the period while we've been developing new games and had this sort of gap of getting things proved is we've increased some of the software, the ability of our software. We redesigned our base software to be able to create games and work with third parties using an enhanced base software. Your question, Ree, about the balance of third party opposed to our internal people, we're sort of cultivating a new system where a lot of our game designers are working with third parties. They come in with their maths initiatives. Our in-house game designers work with them, and they can also work through how those games can be written on our platform and understand the protocols and developing a machine on the Ainsworth platform. To the balance of how it goes forward, that's going to be on depending on results. If we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 external people working with us at the moment, the people who produce the better results will get the more work. It's as simple as that. There's 2 lots of game groups that haven't released games, and we're expecting them to come out now, one from a Reno-based company and one from a Japanese company, and we're excited to see what their stuff will come out. And, of course, you know, you're familiar with our relationship with Bandai. So if that answers your question, we were happy to take on, anyone that's got a game that's interested. We're happy to work with them, and if they work well in the marketplace, we'll continue to work it and expand it. But we have recently increased our local game development size by 3 game designers and mathematicians in the US. You see that we've hired a number of people in the US in the last period. we're working on the game development in that studio there. That studio produced the winner for them in North America last year, and they got working on some clones and additives of the super wind, supercharged, quick spins. So, we're just trying to balance the act there. David, I don't know if that answers your question thoroughly.
No, that's okay. I guess we just got to wait and see how these products perform. And then secondly, just following into the North America biz, I mean, how do we think about the gaming ops segment here for you guys? I mean, can that installed base stabilize in the second half, or we continue to offer customers the ability to convert sales? Because, you know, to this point, I would have thought that, you know, holding the installed base at a higher level is much better for your earnings going forward, given that, you know, sales conversions only support current earnings. I mean, is there any thoughts around segmenting that product suite to avoid these sale conversions that are occurring?
You know, we're under market conditions. Our competitors, IGT and Scientific Games, are offering some of their product, especially the Respin product, for sale as well. So, you know, we've got to work within the market conditions. But for the second half of this year, we're going to have, you know, the Pac-Man, which you noted when you were released this morning. That's going to be a participation only in North America as we start off. And there's another game called Gaglia that is a participation product that comes from Bandai as well. And we've got the Supercharged 7. Some of those products will be available for participation. But we're not going to move away from our offering. If some of the product will be available for sale as well as participation. And until we can consistently get a lot of winners there, we'll keep it that way. We signed an agreement to build a new game for participation, a game called under the title of Marilyn Monroe. This will be a 12-month project, and we're going to put a lot of work on that to make it a participation product only in the future.
Yeah, okay, so we need to wait and see how these new products perform to see if they can stabilise the proprietary content, I guess, is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, I am.
Great. Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Your next question is from Matt Ryan from UBS. Please ask.
Hi, Danny. Hi, Mark. What percentage of the product in the US is available for gaming ops and for sale?
What percentage?
Yeah, like what percentage of the library can you opt to take on participation and or for sale?
Matt, we'll participate in anything, and a lot of times some of the strategies for sales that people who can't afford the machines is to put the machine in under a participation period. If it's successful and their finances turn, we'll then convert it to sale for them. So all our libraries available for participation. What's not available for sale at this stage in North America will be the new Pac-Man Link and Gaglia.
And my understanding is that you'll take a sort of 80-20 deal, and then if the customer converts that participation product to sale, then the amount that they've paid so far will be reduced off the sale price. Is that the sort of basic way that works?
We'll discount some of the participation money.
Okay.
Put it through. It is a win situation where if we need to get into to a venue and we want to show them if the game performs, putting it on an easy participation gives us two vehicles: one that can prove its performance, and two, you know, opens up the door for a sale or an extended participation.
Okay, and then just thinking about I guess the R&D spend and staff headcount and things like that. I guess how are you sort of, I guess, configuring where you're placing more money in terms of, I can see that you're quite clearly flagging the proportion of revenue is now coming more and more from offshore, but obviously Australia and the rest of the world still has the bulk of spend in terms of headcount. So I guess in particular, I'm looking at the R&D line for the US, which looks like about 48 headcount at the moment, up slightly on the year before. So trying to think about, you know, how that number looks moving forward, whether you need to, I guess, expand a bit more within US-centric R&D.
Let me say that there's a number of people that are dedicated for the Americas. As we said, represents 83% of our revenue, and our game development and the people who are posted to do that are, you know, represent the market and the revenues we're getting. So just because the people are based in Sydney, that doesn't mean they're not doing work for North America and America. Most of the work for Latin America comes off a similar style to Australian games, because of Latin America doesn't have fixed bets or everything. So most of the Latin America work is done from Sydney, similar to the Australian or Class 3 games, you know, and across there. But we're increasing the number of Americans over there for North America. As I said, last year I think they did 8 games, and I think they've been increased to do 12 games, in particular on the 640 product, which is our biggest seller across North America. And some of the new releases we have, where we will release them here in the Evo cabinet, we'll release in North America in the 640 cabinet. So the resources do balance out to equal to the revenue and the number of games supplied. But we have got a lot of hard work to snatch back and try to work here and to build our local business up. And you've probably been around the block enough to know that if you have a good performing game in the Australian market, it does travel. So all that resources that are going into building up the Australian market are never wasted, because with an adaption, they can be taken to North America and they always go straight to South America anyway. Does that help, Matt?
Yeah, no, it does. So I guess what you're saying is that, you know, there's quite a lot of overlap in terms of what's being done in the rest of the world in Australia, which is being taken overseas.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter where you sit when you're developing software. They're on real time with each other, and a lot of other countries have a massive amount of software development offshore, but ours is between two groups. I mean, we have the opportunity to expand on that. I don't know if it's been mentioned in previous conversations that next weekend there'll be the top 10 executives out of North America or the Americas, and Australia will be meeting in halfway. Unfortunately, it's in Hawaii. We found halfway to have a global conference, and the point you just made is one of the big conference discussions of how we allocate our resources for game development, and are we getting the best bang from our buck from our people. So that is certainly on our agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question is from Andy Chuck from Macquarie. Please ask.
Oh, hi, Danny. Hi, Mark. Just had a question on historical horse racing machines. How should we be thinking about the expansion opportunities going forward with Churchill Downs Derby City gaming venue? We understand the facility's got 900 units at the moment, but can operate up to 2,000 units. And additionally, can you talk us through the expansion opportunities in the near term with any other states potentially opening up?
At the moment, there is a couple other states and opportunities, but Churchill Downs has won the Oak Road venue, which is going to be a 1,500 machine venue. At present, everything's working fine for them in Derby City. They're averaging $200 plus a day machines, so that result's been good. We've done a lot of work on the system to finish this up. Because of some of the legislation things, we've had to write the software up a bit more to support our system. Actually, Churchill Downs Group are in our offices right now, going up off to finalise how we get that system going forward in the future. There is a couple other states, Virginia and Nebraska, that have legalised opportunities for historical horse racing. But at the moment, the short view is the other venue in Kentucky, Oak Road.
Great. And just with any other new stage happening, can you just quickly talk us through the competitive landscape and your ability to capitalise on those openings?
In the historical horse race? Sorry, mate.
Yes, in historical horse racing.
Well, there's only three companies in America that have historical horse racing. We've got a powerful partner and have the data with Churchill Downs, so we feel we're in a good situation. Our machines in Derby City are earning $200 a day. The other venues that have been operating are not earning half that amount, so we feel that we've got a superior product. So as these venues opened up, every new group has come to have a look at it. So there's a lot of intrigue at how these legislations get through, and they take time. And so we've just got to sit it out. But we feel if there's an opportunity comes up, we can be, you know, first to market.
Great, thanks for that. And just one last one: is there exclusivity with Churchill Downs for the historical horse racing machines?
There is an exclusivity with them, which we can go forward. But they're a partner with this, so if we want to take that data with them, we would. It in the contract it allows us to go to other jurisdictions that doesn't compete against them, and they'll share in some of the revenues out of it.
Great, thanks a lot for that. That's all from me. Cheers.
Again, if you have any questions, please press *1 and wait for your name to be announced. We don't have any other questions as of the moment. Presenters, please continue.
Okay. Thank you all for listening on a busy day. We're happy to answer any other questions. Just let Mark know. We look forward to updating you on our progress in the second half as we continue to execute our clear strategies. Thank you again, and thank you, Edison, and everyone have a good morning. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our call for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.